And speaking of horse chestnuts, Terence Flanagan, Terry.
Yes, Derek, autumn is with us and everybody is telling me about all the nuts and seeds that's around this year. Lots of hawthorns, the rose hips, the acorns, the beech and the conkers. And it's all down to exactly what Aina was talking about. A mast year. This is a mast year. And mast years happen about once every 5 years or so. And to find out more about them, I visited the National Botanic Gardens in Glasnevin to meet Dr. Matthew Jebb, Director of the Gardens.
So Terry, welcome to the gardens in autumn. Autumn just beginning. And the excitement of autumn, I suppose, is the fruits on the tree. But just look at this sweet chestnut. It is groaning with fruit. They're all over the ground. The seeds are dropping onto the ground. They're being picked up by birds, by squirrels, taken away and hidden and buried.
I've never seen so many on this tree. I've passed by this tree many, many autumns in a row. I've never seen the quantity of fruit on it.
Well, what's happening right across the country this year is we are entering a mast year. These are years when some of these big seed-producing trees, the oaks, the beeches, they are producing seed in enormous quantities, which they do not do every year.
And why do they do it?
Well, this is a wonderful thing. It's a mystery. It's a mystery that has been recorded from the earliest years of agriculture. People knew that in a mast year was the great year to herd your pigs into the oak forest or the beech forest, and they would gorge themselves on all of these fruits. And actually, they were providing a good service because acorns, by and large, are toxic. So cattle, sheep and horses do not do well if they eat acorns, but pigs have a cast-iron constitution and they're fine with them.
You'd wonder what's the advantage to the tree, say the oak tree. Okay, you're saying that the pigs will eat it, but other animals won't eat it. I would have thought, first of all, if there were so many of them, some of them are going to manage to germinate.
One of the oddities of nature, I suppose, is we see fruit trees, and we all know birds eat the holly seeds, the cotoneaster seeds, the sorbus seeds, and of course they come out the other end of the bird after it's flown sometimes a couple of miles. And that's a great way of dispersing your seed. Not only is your seed being spread a great distance, but it's even coming down with its own packet of fertilizer. But when you get to something like a hazel tree or an oak tree, well, this is the edible bit, and you'd say, well, once the pigs are in there or the jays, surely they're going to eat up all of the seeds, and that's not a very efficient way of sending out babies into the world. So what the trick is you produce such a glut of seeds that when the jay or the squirrel or the pig is gorging themselves, they're rooting up the ground, in the case of the pig, they're going to miss some. They're going to miss some, and those will be the progenitors of the next generation.
How much of an energy toll does it take on the tree?
A lot, and you can see it in pieces of timber. When you look at the growth rings in a piece of oak, for example, you will see a rhythm to it. Every 4 to 5 years, there is a very small amount of growth. Now, some of these are associated with climatic conditions that year. Photosynthesis was not as great, but we can also very clearly see that these patterns match up to the mast years. So this year, 2025, we've got a mass production of acorns. 2020 was the last one, and 2016 before that, and so on, all the way into the past. Every 4 to 5 years, an enormous crop is produced.
Now, some people will say that it means we're in for a hard winter.
Yeah, and that's an easy thing to say, but no plant, let alone a human being, can predict what winter's going to be like. And when we have mass crops on trees, yes, it's a common view that, holly tree's got a big crop of berries, that means it's going to be a hard winter. Actually, it meant we had a wonderful spring, because by and large, these big nut-producing trees, oaks and beeches and hazel, they're all wind pollinated. They don't rely on insects. They need a very nice, warm, dry period for their pollen to spread around and pollinate local trees. And every 4 to 5 years, that's precisely what happens.
And if it's a little bit windy at the same time, even better.
Even better. And one of the remarkable features is the edges of oak forests and clearings in oak forests. You can obviously see a much better production of acorns where the wind has swirled around and the pollen has been repeatedly blown against the female catkins. This is where we've got the best pollination.
And when it happens too, It tends to be for every oak tree, and not only just the oak trees, maybe the beech trees as well. Do the trees, or can they, communicate with each other?
Well, this is one of the sort of mysteries, I suppose, and unfortunately there has been a proliferation of literature all about the fact that trees are talking to one another on through mycorrhizal connections. And so you may have heard the phrase, you know, the wood wide web. This is based on very, very poor science, in that the answer to a lot of this is that a fungus is not a massive organism hiding under the soil. And a lot of people presume, you know, that the mycorrhizal threads all add up to a gigantic living fungus. But actually it dies. The hyphae are constantly dying at the back and growing forwards. They're moving through the soil. So there is never at any point a direct link between one tree and another. Yes, there's mycorrhizal connections that all trees have in their roots, but it is ephemeral and it's on the move. And you can trace, you know, labelled atoms of carbon, nitrogen from one tree to another tree. But what's happened is that tree has lost those labelled molecules into the soil. A fungus has picked them up. The fungus has moved them. They have then ended up in soil near a neighbouring tree, and that tree has picked them up. So it is not a direct link. It is the turnover that's going on constantly in the soil.
Now, when we look at the oak trees here in the gardens and around the country at this time of the year, they're just laden with acorns, probably thousands, maybe tens of thousands of acorns on each tree.
And what is beautiful about that system is a big mature oak is producing in each mast year at least 10, maybe, you know, a very large elderly tree, up to 20,000 acorns. So year to year, they will have very poor years. But over a century, they're producing 500,000, 1 million acorns. This is an astonishing number of offspring. And only one of that 500,000 has to survive to replace that oak. So it gives you an idea of the scale of change, the flux in nature, that in order to produce offspring, you have to produce enormous numbers of seeds, babies, and one or two of them will make it to adulthood.
How important are animals now at this time of the year for spreading these acorns, hoping that they will germinate in somewhere else? I'm thinking of jays and squirrels.
Yeah, so the important thing is, if oak trees produce massive crops of acorn year after year, well, then jays' populations would also increase. Squirrel populations would increase because they knew there was a reliable source of food every single autumn. The fact that they do it only every 4 or 5 years means that none of their predators, the organisms that eat their acorns and destroy them, have populations that will cause damage. And therefore, you, by producing this mass crop, a mast year, you overwhelm your predator. And even in the tropics, with no seasons at all, trees, especially on poorer soils, will have a mast year every 9 up to 10 years between the mast years. Very similar pattern. It means their predator is never able to predict a reliable source of food, so their population drops to quite a low level.
So it's all in synchronicity, isn't it? Up and down and up and down, but maintaining a population.
And plants are, you know, supremely good at logging every single day, from the shortest day of the year to the longest day of the year, the temperature. They can make predictions about what they have experienced, and therefore there are triggers that obviously bring about these mast years.
Now, this year is a mast year, as you say. Is it for every species? We see it with the oak trees, we see it with the beech trees, we see it with the sweet chestnuts, but what about other trees?
Well, mast specifically refers to these nut and seed-producing forest trees, and beech and oak are notoriously good at both having the mast year almost in, you know, synchronicity. Not exact. And there's always an oak that will produce a few acorns every single year. But it is this enormous mast year that seems to be triggered by a very particular set of circumstances. And the truth is, we still haven't had a nice experimental example to prove this is the case.
But we do think it has something to do with spring, more so than the autumn.
You're right, and it's to do with that good spring season. But don't forget that we can have early springs, we can have late springs, and as long as the moment they are actually shedding their pollen, if that week or so is good weather, then you will get into this mast year.
Now, looking around at the hedgerows at this time of the year too, we look at the reds, we look at the hawthorns, we look at the rose hips and so on. It's a really good year for them too.
Birds can see red very well. You know, red light is something that birds are attuned to. In the tropics, they pollinate red flowers, and in our climate, they disperse red fruits. So this is one of the reasons so many fruits are bright red in the trees.
Red and green should never be seen except in the face of an Irish colleen. You don't wear red trousers and a green top because they stand out against each other. But I'm just looking across there at the yew tree. I can see the berries now.
Yes.
And it's so easy to see them. It's telling the birds, we're here, come and get us.
And there are the Mayo colours, you know, and the county is named after the yew. And it is very clear that that's a very neat combination.
Now, going back to the acorns, as we see lots and lots of them on the ground at the moment, there'll be far too many for all of the animals to pick up and to bury and to eat. Should we as humans collect them?
Oh, definitely. There's not a problem. There is such a glut. This is part of their tactic, is to prevent them being eaten. And so there will always be spare acorns. And I'd encourage people to go out and grab some handfuls of acorns, pop them into pots and produce little baby oaks.
Now, is it difficult? And when should they put them in the pots?
Straight away. One of the things that will kill an acorn is drying out. So even a matter of 2 or 3 weeks in a centrally heated or a dry house is enough to kill acorns. So you've got to move quickly. As soon as you get them home, pop them up in soil.
And finally, Matthew, the botanic gardens in autumn, I always think it's the best time of the year to visit.
No, well, that's great to hear, because people often say to me, you know, when is the best time to come? And I'll say, well, you know, if you want to see spring flowers, spring. And if you want to see a summer border, summer. And like you say, in autumn, we have got all of the colours coming up, the fruits coming up. So there's an amazing difference to see. Plants change throughout the year. And every time you come in here, there's something new to spot.
And you're open every day and it's free.
The only day we're closed is Christmas Day, but otherwise, nothing better than to come out. And right now we have, as many of our autumns in the past, the sculpturing context. So there's two whole levels of things to see in the gardens.
Thank you very much indeed, Terry Flanagan and Dr. Matthew Jebb.